how I would describe just the most wonderful feelings or the most wonderful sensations. One of the things I love is the smell of a gardenia. And so my husband got a gardenia plant for me. Well, they have certain requirements. They need high humidity, and here in Colorado Springs, of course, we don't have that. And so I have rigged up a plastic bag over my gardenia, so I can't enjoy the plant until I get a bud. But so I've got a plastic bag. There's a dish underneath my pot with stones in it that I keep water in, so there's moisture coming up. I need to water the plant from the bottom. There are all these things to make a nurturing environment to try and get a blossom from this that I can enjoy. And today we're going to talk about creating a nurturing environment for our children. What I'd like you to do is to look at this definition, the definitions for nurture and for environment, and write three of your own definitions for a nurturing environment. And you don't have to use these words, but use these ideas just to get a couple of working, two or three working definitions for yourself on creating a nurturing environment. How would you put that in your own words? I'll give you just a couple minutes. Okay, who would like to share a couple of their, one of their definitions for a nurturing environment? Security, a place where children feel accepted and secure. Mm-hmm. Very good, very good. Maybe yours is very different from this. It would be good to hear a range of ideas. Preparation place for adulthood, that's a good idea, very good. Because that has the goal in mind, doesn't it? The end. Okay, I'm just going to give you a minute. Write down as many things that you can think of as elements that would make up a nurturing environment. Just as quickly as you can, just write down the things that you think would be important to a nurturing environment. Okay. Somebody read your list nice and loud for us.
Love, communication, touch, eye contact, respect, acceptance, freedom to fail, responsibility, kind words, encouragement in the area of their interest, time focused on it.
Very good. Very good. Let me get one more area of feedback from you. This is the end of the conference. You've heard lots of speakers. You've been to workshops. Are you feeling saturated? Like, I've hit the point where my head's just swimming. I've heard so many different things. I feel like I really can't take in anything more. How many of you are feeling like that? I think it's easy at a conference to hit a point where you feel like, no matter how good this is, I just feel like I'll be a hypocrite because I've already heard so many things that I need to apply, and I almost feel overwhelmed. It's very easy for that to happen at a conference. What I'm trying to do is evaluate whether you really need more content, or if you just need some time maybe to discuss in small groups what you're learning and what you want to apply, or even to spend some time alone thinking through on how you're going to make application. Could you give me some feedback?
This workshop, this one, is labeled different than the workshop. And things like this one would be more complicated, this one would be more practical than some of the other ones. This is more practical application.
Okay. Okay, I just at coffee break, I was talking with a couple, and they said, I feel like we're hearing the same things, you know, the overlapping ideas. And as I talked with them, I thought, I wonder if they feel like they've hit the saturation point. What would you?
Mm-hmm. acceptable. It's a little ways to know.
Okay. 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 Well, let me share a little bit, and then maybe we'll take some time just to for a little interaction too. One of the things that I made a list of areas that I thought would contribute to this, and I'd like to just hit on them kind of in a shotgun fashion. One is the area, I think, for our homes to be a nurturing environment, they need to be a haven. They need to be a place of harmony. Now, this does not mean that it's a place where there is no conflict, but it needs to be a place where we know how to settle conflict. Because, you know, we don't learn in an environment of turmoil, but in an environment of where there's a certain amount of peace and stability. And I've heard people say, well, your kids, if they get into conflict, you need to just let them settle it themselves. And I've often thought about what it would be like for me if I were being mugged and I went to the policeman and he said, lady, you're going to have to settle that, learn to settle that yourself, you know. And I think part of our job as parents is to provide an environment of peace and of harmony where our children can be nurtured. And so I think it's important to help our children learn to settle conflict. Let me ask you, is this something that you've already covered? Okay. When I look at my little children, I think one day they are going to be roommates to somebody. One day they are going to be spouses to someone. And one of the things I want to help them learn to do is to settle conflict. Now, what do we know of settling conflict from the scriptures? What does the Bible teach about settling conflict? Okay, what else? Turn the other cheek. Good. Right. So I look at myself as, in creating a nurturing environment, not as the judge to settle conflict, but as a trainer. And so I want to teach my children how to settle conflict. Matthew 5, because our time will be short, Matthew 5, 23 and 24, and Matthew 18, 15, both talk about conflict. One says, if you are ready to worship and you're ready to offer your gift to the Lord, and you recognize that you have sinned against your brother, leave your gift at the altar and go and be reconciled to your brother. In Matthew 18, it says, if you realize that your brother has sinned against you, go to your brother and be reconciled. So what the scripture teaches is that no matter whether you are the person who has offended or are the person who has been offended, you should take the initiative to reconcile. So when my children come to me and they say, Beth made me so mad, she, you know, and they're telling me what's happened, what I try to do is to help that child come to the point where they can initiate reconciliation. So they come to me, and I try not to operate as the judge, but as the trainer, as the coach, as the teacher to the children. So I say, honey, what you need to do is you need to get your emotions under control so that you can go to her with the right voice. And you need to tell her what you told me. You need to say, Beth, when you did that, it hurt my feelings. And so I help them articulate what it was that the person did that offended them and how it made them feel. And then I have them go to the person, because the Bible says, go to the person who you have offended or who has offended you. Now, what I need to do as the coach or the trainer is to stand in the hallway and monitor the reaction of the person they go to. Because suppose Graham goes to Beth and says, when you did that, it hurt my feelings. And she says, tough. Well, that would be a place where I would step in and then help her with her reaction to that, and bring her to the point where she sees the Bible talks about asking for forgiveness and for forgiving, and help them work through that. Now, in the same way, if they come to me and they say, I think Daddy loves this one better than me, well, I say, honey, you need to go to Daddy and express what you're feeling, so that there's reconciliation. And of course, it may be that you may have to help your partner be prepared for that. Because it's easy for a dad or a mom to say, that's ridiculous. Of course I love you as much as I love the other one. But to be able to say, honey, what did I do that made you feel that way? And to understand their feelings, so that you can say, in our family when this happened, Beth said, well, Dad seems to be more interested in Graham's gymnastics than my ballet. Well, Roger said, honey, it's because I know more about gymnastics than ballet, all those French terms. Would you educate me? Would you help me to understand? Well, that brings reconciliation. Now, what happens in a family when you work through something like that? You feel closer, don't you? And it's conflict, instead of bringing division in the family, brings a sense of greater intimacy and closeness. So I would encourage you, both as couples, to evaluate, how are we handling conflict as a couple? Are we understanding and working through our conflict so that it brings us closer? What are we modeling for our children? Do we need to make some changes ourselves to be more forgiving and people who overlook small things in order to have a home that's full of harmony? And are we helping our children work through this so that they know how to work through conflict when they are teenagers and when they are married? We have two children now in college, and my daughter is moving in the fall into a house with four other young women. Well, they sat down before they entered into this agreement to live together, and one of the things my daughter Beth had them talk through was, how will we handle conflict? And these girls are not Christians, but they worked through a scriptural, not using the scriptures, but through scriptural basis for solving conflict. Are there any reactions? Do you have any comments or reactions or questions before we go on to something else? That's right. That's right. Yes. 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 Well, exactly. That's right. And in that case, one of the things I've done when it's that kind of thing where it's hard to get to the bottom, take each one separately and say, tell me what happened. Then take the other one, because if you have them together, you're listening to one of them telling and the other one says, that's not what happened. You know, that's what. So get one story, then get the other story, then say to this one, bring them together and say, you are right. So-and-so should not have said that or should not have done that. But you are wrong with your reaction. You need to ask her forgiveness for this. And then to the other one, you were right. that response was not right, but you were wrong in this. But try and help them, because always in conflict, there's usually two sides, and you're right. But the process, sometimes you think, is it worth it? Let them just slug it out. But my thinking is, you are affecting their ability for the rest of their lives to know how to settle conflict. Well, I remember hitting a point with our children where they didn't come to me, where they worked through the process themselves. And that's what we want to work towards, helping them think through on what they need to do, help them learn to be forgiving. And I think our reactions teach them a lot. I remember a time when my husband was cross with me because I forgot to write in the checkbook ledger the numbers. And it wasn't the first time. And he was saying, "Jean, if you just take 1 minute longer when you're at the grocery store and write in the numbers, you know," and he was, well, my oldest son was about 13. And he came out and he said, "Dad, I don't think it's right for you to talk to Mom like that." Well, dads, how do you handle that? My husband said, "Matt, I'm not angry with your mom. I'm just trying to make a point. But if you ever feel that I'm talking to your mother in a way that's not right, I want you to come to me. And if you feel that I'm ever treating you or Beth or Graham unfairly, I want you to come to me and I promise I'll listen." Now that gives a whole new environment for correcting them, because they realize that that we're all fellow learners. Anything else? Any reaction? Any other responses?
I guess I can say that. I would say part of the time it's because it's part of our home, and I've gotten into our home, that you might feel like apologizing for the smallest thing. It's, you know, it's part of our home, it's that, you know, it's going to be a reason. And there are actual times where I've got an 8-year-old, and almost 5-year-old, I did not have to tell my son.
Well, see, and some kids, I think some kids their makeup is more sensitive, others aren't. And I think, you'll have to, I think some, as adults, some of us are more sensitive to things than others. And so it may be that this would be a thing to put on your prayer list, that they would be more sensitive to when they've hurt others' feelings. It may be an area of teaching. Now, one of the things that, yes.
What age range are you talking about? Well, let's have four. Okay. Okay.
I don't know in a child's development when that point is, but I think it's something that you would, just as you're teaching them, please and thank you, and to say, "I'm sorry," even though it may not have the same content intellectually or emotionally that it will have as they understand more of what's involved. I think you start when they're little, and it's the same way as you're teaching them about Jesus. I remember my, because I came to know the Lord as a high school senior, I didn't want my children to pray when they were very, very young, to receive the Lord because I thought they will not understand all this. And my husband said to me, Jean, we never have to be afraid of anybody coming to Jesus wherever they are in their understanding. Because no matter, you know, C.S. Lewis, when he came to Christ, he's a brilliant man. He still did not have a mature understanding of the things of Christ. And so for all of us, it's we come where we are, and it's a process of continual growth and depth of understanding. So I would think with all of these things, we want to begin inculcating this in whatever way we can, as young as we can, knowing that it's going to, we'll hit this over and over and over again, and it'll have more content to our children as they grow.
Mm-hmm. I don't know this for sure, it's just an observation, but it seems to me that whatever age we're talking about, that to tell, to explain things like manners and business of forgiveness is to work for children unless they see a model. And what you mentioned a minute ago, I don't think probably happens in very many homes where the mother and father treat one another verbally the way that they're asking their children to treat
yes.
one another. Where
yes.
they actually express the things to one another
yes.
and model that to the child. Well, I mean, I was wrong. I apologize. You forgive me. Yes, I forgive you. I mean, maybe those things occur on a different level with husband and wife. But if the child never sees it, it's just words to them.
Yes. And I think it isn't that we have to be afraid to have our children see us in conflict, but we want to, in conflict, work through our conflict to greater intimacy, and we want to make sure they see that part too, and where they are seeing us work through that. Now, with children's feelings, I believe that there are things that we do that contribute to a spirit of rebellion in our children. Now, I don't mean to say that if we have children that have certain rebellious characteristics that we have done something wrong, because we know that because of sin and our sin nature, we all have a certain rebellion inside of us. But I think there are things we do as parents that contribute to a spirit of rebellion. Now, you've all been in the grocery store, and you've seen somebody, you know, treat their children with great harshness and roughness, you know, grabbing them by the, squeezing their arms, shaking them, over here, now. Well, think if your husband or your wife said something, or your boss spoke to you like that or treated you like that. I mean, it just makes you feel like you're going to stiffen up inside, and it produces a spirit of rebellion. Well, I believe one of the things that produces rebellion in children is a sense of being unfairly treated. So in my children, when I notice a coolness towards me or a rebellion in their spirit, maybe in their reaction to their siblings, one of the things I do is take them aside and say, do you feel that Dad or I have treated you unfairly in some way? And it's amazing how often something will surface where they'll say, yeah, I didn't think it was right that you did this or that. Now, that's a point from which to work through something with your child and try to give them a sense of your understanding them. And all the way through, I can't remember at what point or at what age with my children that I noticed that. But if you notice a coolness in their spirit towards you, or a rebellion, or a kind of where they are just pulling against you all the time, take them aside and see if you can identify an area where they feel that they have been unfairly treated. Now, your tendency will be to be defensive. When they express it, you think, that was not unfair. You deserve, you know, that kind of a spirit. Now, it may be that it is true that you feel that you did not treat them unfairly. But if they perceived it as unfair treatment, it's worth pursuing and trying to figure out how what you did, and if you could have handled it in a different way. I remember my husband has a mentally retarded brother who's lived with us various times over the years. Well, when Donnie was coming to live with us, I said, Lord, what is it you want from me in this time of Donnie being with us? And I felt the Lord was saying, Gene, I want you to love him as if it were me. And so that was my application. I tried to think of ways that I could work at loving Donnie as if it were Jesus. I got to a point where he can be very difficult to be around, and I got to the point where I thought, Lord, I can't. And then I went a step further. I said, I won't. Well, whenever you tell the Lord, it's one thing to tell the Lord, Lord, I can't. Help me. Give me grace. It's another thing to say, I won't. And I knew when I said that, it set up a whole chain of things. One, I felt estranged in my relationship to the Lord. I resented Roger for bringing Donnie to live with us. And from then on, it was all downhill. On Saturdays, we would blitz the house cleaning and everybody be helping. Nobody could please me. Now, whenever you hit a point where nobody can please you, you have to start looking back to what was the point of probably disobedience in your own life, because it's kind of centrifugal force off of some disobedience in your own life. Well, during that time when nobody could please me, my daughter came to me and she said, Mom, when you act like this, it makes me feel rebellious. And that was one of the times I realized that often the way we are reacting stirs a spirit of rebellion in our children. And so it wasn't until I went back and said, okay, Lord, I can't love Donnie as if it were you. Give me grace, but I will again look to you to help me in this. And so it gives a certain spirit to the house. I think another thing that helps develop a nurturing environment is your children want to please you. If it seems to you that they're always trying to do something to get up your ire, it's probably because they feel they can't please you. They've tried, and even when they tried, it wasn't good enough. And so assume that your children want to do right and that they want to please you. And it may be that if you're feeling that they're pulling against you, you need to go back to that point and try and figure out, do they feel like they've been unfairly treated? Like no matter how hard they tried, they couldn't please me. And then communicate to them, even when they fail. Say, honey, I know you want to do right. And that doesn't mean you still don't discipline or teach or train, but don't always assume that they're out to get you. Any reaction to this or comments? Yes. I think that's another thing in a nurturing environment. If you've got two different age children, what you need to do is you need to protect both of them from one another. That would be one point. So the older child, you need to make sure that the younger one does not violate his privacy, that often, you know, there'll be one child coloring and the baby comes in and you think, well, he's just a baby, he doesn't know. But I think part of our, what we want to do is to give, to not let the baby come in and interrupt the privacy or ruin the things of the older one. Then we need to protect the younger one from the older one, just in a physical sense and in lots of things. But I think I would put on my prayer list, I'd say, Lord, help me identify what it is that makes him think that he's being treated unfairly. And I remember when I had a baby and then a toddler. I thought, it's so often you say to the toddler, honey, wait just a minute, I've got to do this for the baby. Well, what I would do is, even if the baby was asleep and I was going to be doing something with the older one, I'd say to the baby that's asleep, Beth, you'll just have to wait. This is my time with Matthew. But I was just trying to find ways to communicate that it works both ways. And so you may... Yes. 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 Yes.
And I tell him, well, that's part of being a big brother. She wants to be with your kid. And I feel like it would be unfair to say, sorry, Shannon, you can't call her because hers is calling right now.
Yeah.
And you can't call her because he's already calling.
Uh-huh. Well, and it may be that you can see, it sounds like he's seeking for ways to be unique, where he doesn't have the competition. So what you may want to do is find ways to give him that, maybe by saying, Daddy wants to just take you because you're, you know, and where there are things where you just center on him and where she's not a part of that, and because he's older, to give that sense. And or it may be in talking, you might say something like, she is learning so much from you, and, you know, where you're just talking, but where your attention is really focused on him and he doesn't have the competition. Our kids told us that a date alone, no matter what age they were, that was the most special thing we could do for them. Where there's no competition, there's nobody breaking in on the conversation, just a date alone. And you may want to do that with him and think of ways, like this conference is a wonderful time for you and your husband just to think through, what are ways that we could single him out where he has no competition? And anything else? Another thing that I think makes a nurturing environment is for your children to feel planned for. In John 14, 1 and 2, it says that the Lord has gone to prepare a place for us. Now, there is something about knowing that a place has been prepared for you, that people have thought ahead and planned for you, that you're not just backstroke. Now, do your kids come to you and say, what are we going to do today? Do they? What they're really asking is, have you given any special thought to today, or is it just going to kind of unfold? And our kids, when I ask them, what makes you feel loved? One of the things they said is, when we feel like we've been planned for. This is as they got older, but looking back. So, little things that you can do that make your children feel planned for. Maybe if you have a morning snack or afternoon snack time, fix a tray and make it special. Or throw a blanket over the kitchen table and make it like a tent and let them have their snack in the tent. Or if they're playing out in a tree, put their snack in a bucket and put a rope on it and let them eat in the tree if they're old enough. Turn turn down their bed at night with a, like a company fold and put a little note on it. And even if they're too young to read it, to be able to read that note where it says, Mommy thinks you're special and I hope you have good dreams or something like that. But where you're doing things that communicate to them, I've thought ahead, I've planned for you. You are not just a backstroke activity to me. And what you may want to do is to develop a brainstorming list, just a list of things that you can do that communicate to your children that they are special. And then what I do is I tape it on the inside of my kitchen cupboard. And then, you know, there are days when your kids come to you and they say, what can we do today? And you think, I could not think of something fun to do if somebody held a gun to my head. But if you have this list, you can just look down there and think, this takes too much time and I don't have time to do that today, but we could do this. Now, my son, who's 16, I was in preparation for this workshop. I said, Graham, what are the memories you have from when you were little that really made home special? And so he was naming off a few things. One thing was a treasure hunt. And I would just take some little scraps of paper, and the first one might say, rub-a-dub-dub, the place where you scrub. Well, then the kids would think, the bathtub. So they'd run to the bathtub, and the next clue would be in the bathtub. And it would just, depending on the ages of the children, it could be where the clue is just so obvious that, you know, they just couldn't miss it. Or it could be kind of like in a nursery rhyme. Or you can make it more difficult as your children get older. But they would run from place to place, and then maybe their snack would be hidden behind the couch. They'd be finding their last clue there. So a treasure hunt, making your home a fun place. I remember for those of you who have young children, and I know it's just so much just to do the things you have to do sometimes when your children are little and you're cutting up everybody's meat and tying everybody's shoe and holding the diaper in the toilet and, you know, to flush it and all those things. And you think, I don't know that I can do anything more than what I'm doing. But it won't be long and you'll be just a little bit further along, and it just takes this much more to make it really special. For example, one day while I was fixing dinner between things, I just went in the bedroom and I put on odd socks, odd shoes. I put my blouse on backwards and I put on a funny hat. And the kids came out and they said, why are you dressed like that? And I said, oh, tonight we're having a crazy dinner and everybody's going to dress like this. Go get ready for dinner. So they all went in the room and just put on funny clothes. And then my husband came home from work and he looked at them and he said, what's going on here? And they said, oh, we're having a crazy dinner. Everybody's going to dress like this. So my husband went in and got in the spirit of things. Well, I just put different placemats on, different dishes. You try and teach your kids to set the table properly, you know, with a napkin and the fork on this side and the knife and the spoon on this. I just set the table all crazy. And I forget what I put on the table as a centerpiece. I think it was a football or something. But just a crazy dinner. Well, what did it take that much more? And it made them feel like I had thought through that it wasn't just getting by the skin of our teeth. So ask the Lord to give you ideas of things that just take that much more but make this much difference. And it makes a different environment in your home. Questions, interaction, thoughts. Probably leftovers. One of the things I did when it was leftovers was I'd make it a theme dinner. Like one time I put a blue sheet on the table as a tablecloth, set the table, and I said, we're going to have a seafarer's dinner tonight. And so I helped the kids find things in the house that we could use as a centerpiece, shells and things that would have a nautical theme. And then I took a piece of shelf paper and I wrote the menu and I put down things like Mermaid Delight, very generic, you don't know what that is, a seaweed special. And I was serving leftovers, but it sounded like a really special dinner. Sometimes it backfires. We had Bangladesh night, and one night a week we would have just a soup, or we'd have like rice and a vegetable or something, and that was Bangladesh night, and then we'd put money in a jar and send it to World Vision. Well, one night I was serving leftovers, and the kids came out and said, Bangladesh night again? So it can kind of backfire on you. But then another time, this is when the children were very small, I had a buzzard dinner. And when I was washing dishes, the breakfast dishes, I put a dozen eggs onto hard boil. And then after their nap, I let them dye eggs. And I just took cups, you know, a red, a blue, and a yellow from the food coloring. And I said, now, Easter eggs are yellow and apricot and pink. But buzzard eggs, you need to put every egg in every color. And you know, it turns out Battleship Gray. But it occupied the kids, put them on a plastic tablecloth, and they dyed these eggs. Then I took a cookie sheet and put foil on it and told the kids, I said, now, buzzards, they put anything in their nest. And I sent them with this foil-covered cookie sheet out in the yard to just pull up grass, put twigs, bottle caps, any rocks, anything they could find to make a nest. And then we arranged these dyed eggs on the nest, and that was our centerpiece for our buzzard dinner. And we had like scrambled eggs and, I mean, just a real simple scrambled eggs and pancake dinner. But it was special. And what did it require of me? I hard-boiled eggs, and they boiled while I was finishing the breakfast dishes. I spread out a plastic tablecloth and put the 3 cups of dye on that. I covered a cookie sheet with foil and sent them out to make their buzzard nest, and it made it special. And so there are little things like that where you can get a lot of mileage out of just a little bit. I believe there is, in a nurturing environment, there is a benefit both to a schedule and to spontaneity. If you are not utilizing bedtime to nurture your children, that is just the most wonderful time, because even when they are very young, they tend to resist bedtime. And they will let you sit on the side of their bed and talk to them. And it's a very responsive time. And so look for ways to cash in on responsive moments. And if you can have a bedtime ritual, that's a very, very excellent time to nurture your children. My husband and I, when our children were really tiny, we would sometimes act out Bible stories. All 3 of ours were in the same room. We'd act out Bible stories. It amazes me, if you have read your children's stories, at a very young age, you can rely totally on the verbal. It's amazing. They may not be speaking that much themselves, but to tell simple stories, even without pictures, they can handle that. One of the things that I wanted to do when the children were very small, and most of you have very young children, was to give them a concept, a more concrete concept of who Jesus was. So I took the idea of Jesus as the Good Shepherd. He is our shepherd. And over a period of months, I developed what would be like a curriculum all based around Jesus as our Good Shepherd. I tried to think, what are the songs I know about sheep and shepherds? And I knew 2. I tried to think, what do they already know about sheep and shepherds? Can I take them to see sheep? We were living on Okinawa at the time, and there were no sheep, so I had to rely on books. Who were Bible characters that did sheep herding? Talk to them about sheep. I made a shepherd, like a paper doll, with sheep that I let them glue cotton on, and we would play with the shepherd and the sheep just on the floor. We did role playing, where I would be the shepherd and they would be the sheep. And it was a thing where you just keep building. They were like around two when we were doing this. And I would have them down on the carpet. We would use the scatter rug. That would be the pool of water. And I'd explain to them, sheep like water that's not all bubbly. And sometimes I'd bring in a cookie sheet or a bowl with water in it. And I'd say, sheep do not like water that's all bubbly like this. They like it to be quiet. And so one of the things the shepherd does is help them find quiet water, still water. And so when we first started playing, I would say, come on, little sheep, come over here, and here's some still water. And sometimes they'd pretend they're drinking out of it. The carpet, that was the grass, and I'd say, come over here, there's some good grass over here. Well, each day that you're playing, you can elaborate a little bit more. I wanted them to know that the shepherd had affection for the sheep. So I'd call each one over and I'd hug them and whisper in their ear, and I gave each one a secret name. And so I'd use that. When they would get injured, I would bring out rags and I'd say, oh, you've got an owie, and I'd bandage their leg. I would explain to them that one of the things the shepherd does is look for the sheep when they're lost. Well, then they would hide behind the couch and I'd have to come find them. He protects them from the bear and the lion. And so my husband would pretend that he was a bear coming after him, and I'd use a pillow and I'd beat him off. So over a period of about 6 months, this was something we played in different ways. Sometimes I'd get a scenery picture off a calendar and let them just roll scotch tape in a circle so that they could very easily tape the sheep and the shepherd on this scene, and we'd hang it on the refrigerator. And we would play sheep and shepherd. When I'd sit on their bed at night, I might tell them a sheep story. Sometimes I'd tell it as if I were the shepherd, and all of a sudden I'm counting, Rollo is missing. And so I'd tell about how I felt and how I looked for my little lamb, and that I could hear this baying in the background, and then I would find him and wrap him up and carry him home. Sometimes I tell it as if I were Rollo, and I'm chasing a butterfly, and then all of a sudden I see that I'm lost. I don't see the shepherd. I don't see my mother or my father, and it's the sun starting to go down, and I can hear wolves, and I'm scared, and I'm cold, and then all of a sudden I hear the shepherd's voice saying, Rollo! You see what I'm saying? How you can adapt this and tell stories around this whole idea of Jesus being the shepherd. Well, during this time, our three-year-old son, I was in a shop in Okinawa, and he asked me if he could wait outside for me, which he's done before. And when I came out, he was gone. I didn't know if he had been kidnapped. I didn't know if he had wandered off. I didn't know whether to go to the left or the right. I didn't really speak Japanese. So I'm praying, and I thought, if I go this direction and he's gone this way, every step I take is further away from him. I just didn't know what to do. And so I'm trying with sign language to talk to these Okinawan ladies, and they said, oh, Oksan, this way. And so I went, and I see someone carrying him down the street. He's crying, and she's trying to help him find our car. Well, that night when he was in bed, he said, I knew that Jesus was the shepherd, and he would help, that he would find me and help me come back to you. Well, there are lessons that you teach using the concrete examples to teach spiritual truth. You could do it with the bread of life, or Jesus is the light of the world. You could have lots of fun with candles and flashlights and pulling the circuit breaker in the house so that none of the lights work and all kinds of things. Well, anyhow, that's just some ideas on using bedtime to nurture your children. But also, for us, if you are a person who has had a quiet time for a year, you think, it's so easy to fall into ruts. Lord, I need something to jostle me out of the ruts so that I can enter in a fresh way with you. And so in our own, in our marriages, we need to do things to jostle so we don't fall into ruts and take each other for granted, so we really aren't interacting with one another. And with our children, in nurturing them, we need to do the same thing. We need to find ways to bring in spontaneity and to change the scene. Let me encourage you, even with little tiny children, when you're going to do your bedtime reading, take a blanket and spread it out in the yard and let them go out in their pajamas and with their blankets and read under a tree. If you are think of ways that are new and exciting, new settings, a new schedule. If you usually do the reading at one time, you may try and vary it sometimes. Children like schedule. They also like things that a little different setting, a little where things are changed just a little bit, a little different approach. My son is a dishwasher in a cafe. He and my daughter both work at the same French bakery and cafe, and it's a place where people come up to the counter to order, and so they don't get many tips. And sometimes they have 300 customers in a day, and they may end up with 65 cents in tips. So my son has been trying to subliminally communicate this idea. And so as he gathers, as he busses tables, real softly he says, "Tips, tips, tips." But with your children, sometimes the direct approach is not the best, especially as they get older. When they're very young, you can teach very directly and very specifically. As they get older, you'll need to look for ways to communicate truth where it's not teachy, but where it's being communicated almost subliminally. So you want to look for good books, books that teach certain truths, not necessarily Christian books, but like Charlotte's Web. I don't know how many of you have read that book. It is a book about a sacrificial death. It's a book about friendship. It's a book about, and so there are all kinds of things that can be communicated, not directly. And so you'll want to look for those. Have fun with your kids. Christian homes should be the most fun homes. And so ask the Lord to help you be a little looser and a little more fun. One of the things that our kids loved was they were all in the same bedroom when they were small. And I'd leave the hall light on, and they would say, "Mom, dance by the doorway." So here's the doorway. And so one time as I'm coming past the doorway, I'd swim by. And they'd just laugh and squeal because they'd only see this much of, you know, that much. Next time I'd kind of dance by, maybe like with a straw hat, and then I'd wait a little while. And then I may crawl by real low like a marine. And they would just, it would just be fun. Well, if you get them in bed early enough so that then after you've done that, then you go in and sit on their bed and then you bring them down again, quiet them down, and where you talk and share ideas with them. Pray that God would help you develop a gentle, kind manner with your children. And there are times when I have grabbed my kids and squeezed their arms in anger. I just felt sick afterwards. And when you do that, ask God's forgiveness and their forgiveness, and try to step in on things before they get to the point where you're really frustrated so that you don't end up doing that. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you break into small groups. I know you've gotten so much this week, and you could just feel like, I don't know if I can take any more. The greatest benefit from a conference like this is if you can write down one specific thing that you want to work on to make a part of your life. Now, lots of other things, you will be affected by all kinds of things. But if you set one specific thing that you're going to work on, and especially if you're here with your spouse, try and say, you know, try and help me work on this. What I'd like you to do is to get into a small group, take 5 minutes just to yourself, to make some notes to yourself of what you'd like to work on. And then we're going to take just a few minutes for you to share with one another and then pray for each other that God would help you to make progress in this area. Now, two things can happen after a conference. One is it can be like a snowball. And it can be like a snowball in July. And tomorrow on the way home, as you start to drive away or catch your flight home, you start to change gears. You think, what am I going to have for dinner when I get home? Am I going to have to grocery shop? Did I have any milk in the refrigerator? And you start thinking that, and the snowball starts melting. And by the time you get home, you've just got this little puddle. And you think, it was a wonderful time, but you've changed gears so much, you've lost it. Or it can be a snowball in January. And you start it rolling right now in this session. And it starts rolling down the hill. And in a week from now, it's bigger than it is right now. Sunday, your pastor is going to say something, and it just adds another layer to your snowball. You're having your quiet time, and the Lord speaks to you, and it just adds another layer to that snowball. And by a month from now, your snowball can be bigger than it is right now, or it can be just a puddle in a day. And so what we'll do is we'll take this next 15 minutes, 5 minutes for you, and then I'll just tell you, okay, move into your sharing time. Feel free to share with others what it is you're going to try and do, what your snowball is, and then try and take a little time, just a sentence prayer even, for one another before we dismiss today. Any questions on doing that? Okay, let's just break up into those into sessions. Whatever is a comfortable group for you, 4, 5, 6, something like that, so you each have a chance to share.